What have we got there, Ro? Welcome to you, Rowan Connolly.
Hello, BP. Hi, everyone. A bit of Rage Against the Machine.
Thank you.
Could be a touchy subject, actually, but I'm told it's a little bit raucous. But anyway, how are you? Big weekend of sport.
Indeed. Yeah, just got back into town last night, a couple of days at the Adelaide Oval. Worst places to be, I've got to say.
Yeah, no, it's gone really well, hasn't it? I blogged the whole day's play yesterday and obviously watched it on Friday as well. And it's been interesting, actually, not only how it unfolded, but the politics of it, because you could tell right from the start of the coverage yesterday, the Channel 9 boys were pumping it up so hard.
Yeah.
And Cricket Australia were doing it. And actually, last night, the MCG, on their Twitter account, tweeted out a poll. Would you like to see the Boxing Day test played day night? I would have thought it would have been a bit late to change the scheduling of that.
Would have thought so.
But I'm not sure the players are quite as enthusiastic. No. That's the impression you're getting. And I just wonder if the authorities push too hard, whether the players might start jacking up about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't like to see it overwhelmingly, test cricket, become a day-night sort of event. I think, you know, it's a bit like if we turned every AFL game into a night game or Friday night and packed everything into Friday night or Saturday night. You know, the Boxing Day test, certain tests, Boxing Day in Sydney, I mean, historically, we've always got the crowds, so we don't need to change that. But clearly, I can see the argument that in some parts of Australia, people aren't coming along to test cricket, and that goes for the globe as well. I mean, we've seen India and South Africa wrap up in 3 days in their test match, next to no one going along to test cricket in certain parts of Asia. We know that England will always draw test crowds. No one's going to watch the West Indies, or probably because they're so poor, number one. So I think there's an argument to do something and try something, but not have that as the overwhelming feature of where test cricket goes.
I agree with that. I think Brisbane and Adelaide shape as the logical venues, don't they? Perth, you can't really do it because of the time difference with the eastern states. Hobart, yeah, I guess you could do it at Belrive, couldn't you?
Mm.
But it's just, you know, the various nuances of test cricket. It's been interesting to see how they've been affected. The pink ball, I've got no doubt after watching the first two games that the ball is doing a bit more at night.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. It's been moving through the air particularly quite a bit. They say the ball's the same, but clearly it's not.
Mm.
Sight seems to be an issue. Now, Steve Smith dropped a couple yesterday and he said it wasn't because of that, but he seemed to, even the one he caught on Friday night, he seemed to pick up quite late.
Yep.
Actually, having been there, I'm keen to ask you, what are the nuances of the crowd? Because a traditional day's test cricket, you're used to the crowd getting there early and then gradually thinning out during the day. Is it the reverse?
Well, I saw the entire day Friday and I had to leave at the dinner break last night to get a flight home. So when I was crossing the bridge back into Adelaide, there were a stack of people coming in, I reckon, just for that last session who might have been having a drink at, you know, one of the pubs in the city or having a bit of dinner. Let's go in and take in a bit of the cricket in the last session so we can actually see the whole the night effect.
And do they reduce the prices if you just go for the last session?
They'd there is a twilight cost. I think if you come in after 4 or 4.30, there is a reduction in cost.
Well, that makes sense. It's been a great test just purely in terms of the cricket. Yesterday, there seemed to be a number of issues bob up, didn't there? There was the DRS controversy with Nathan Lyon. Which had me thinking again, you know, does this thing cause as many problems as it solves?
Yep.
Sean Marsh, you know, the debate about his place in the team roars on.
He's copped it too, hasn't he, Sean Marsh? I mean, you know, Ian Chappell, so many have just, and probably rightly so. I mean, unfortunately, if we just put some cold, hard facts out there, right, he just doesn't cut it. At test
no,
level,
doesn't.
Sean Marsh. He's been a decent domestic cricketer. There's no doubt about that. He's got a lot of talent. And you can see the anguish on, you know, Jeff Marsh as his two sons are gone within the space of 15 minutes yesterday. And Mitch plays a horrible shot, but bowled really, really well.
He did bowl well.
Late in the day.
He did bowl well.
Maybe, you know, what was going through Sean Marsh's mind, knowing, yeah, am I in here just for a test or two? And I've been in and out and in and out. But the stats are just so overwhelming. The amount of bad scores he's made in, what, 20-odd test matches.
Well, he's got, I mean, he's clearly got some inner demons, you know, psychologically, and they've really sort of crueled his chances. And, you know, should you be playing in a test batting lineup with an average of 33? I wouldn't have thought so. So, yeah, look, he certainly, I don't think the selectors will be very popular if they go to him again.
Yep.
You know, look, just generally, I think the Kiwis, the longer this series has gone, the more competitive the Kiwis have got. You know, it's, and this is a bugbear of mine, and it's probably an old argument now, and it's a lost argument, but three test series, you know, are they enough? I'm a big fan of the five test series. You know, you talk about a five day test unfolding. I think a series can unfold in similar fashion, and we only see them now with the Ashes, really,
yeah,
don't we?
But, well, I think, I don't think every nation, we're not blessed, are we, with having a lot of great nations playing test cricket at the moment.
No.
So if every series, if Australia Bangladesh went to five, or Australia West Indies went to five right now with their current status, it used to be a long summer.
Yeah, and again, and this has always been the problem with cricket anyway, just by its nature and geographic spread, that everything is so ad hoc.
Mm.
It's really hard to sort of standardise everything in the game, isn't it? And particularly with things like, you know, the Test World Championship.
Yep.
You know, like, we should be able to do that, but there's so many different competing interests and priorities, and now the scheduling, because of the three forms of the game, makes it even more complicated.
Yep.
So, you know, I think there are inherent problems that right at the moment are a real hindrance to the game sort of dragging itself out of the mire.
Yeah, absolutely. 9-4-2-9-11-16. Happy to open up the lines. Your thoughts on cricket. Anything you really want to put on the agenda with Rowan in this hour. We're going to talk some footy as well and have a chat to Adam Markham, picked up by the Tigers on Friday in the rookie draft. But just for me, finally, on Adelaide, it is, for mine, I've done enough footy there in the last 2 years. So it was actually great to go and watch some cricket and sit out in the outer, in the Gavin Wanganeen stand, the lower deck just next to the hill, which was fantastic. You hear a bit out there. I've been a bit spoilt being in the commentary box, Rowan. I haven't heard some of the band for a while.
What are you getting at? A little bit, what, uninformed or a little bit fruity? Or?
Well, I got to say, there are a couple of blokes who are well gone, and they got us scored it out. And we noticed half an hour later, he's back in.
Oh, yeah.
How did that bloke get back in?
That old trick.
To the point where the security guard just said, mate, just sit in your seat. Don't move.
Yeah.
I'm not going to make a big scene here and try and drag you out. Just sit there and don't move.
It is a long day.
Interesting. But I think the best venue in Australia right now, it is. I've lived here all my life. We're very lucky to have the MCG, which is the Coliseum. But the Adelaide Oval for mine is the best sporting venue in this country by far right now.
It's probably got the perfect balance of amenities with atmosphere, hasn't it? Because they've retained enough of the, you know, the gum, is it the gum tree end or the scoreboard end, you know, that
cathedral end.
You've still got that. One of my criticisms of modern sporting stadiums, and even the MCG now to an extent, they're all sort of homogenised. There's no points of difference.
Yep.
You know, and after 15 years at Etihad, I still can't remember which end's a Lockett end and which end's a Coventry end, you know. they do it really well, and good luck to them. I was in the car briefly the other day during a break, and it's interesting, the names up on the stands and stuff now. I heard Jim Maxwell, who conceded that he was no AFL aficionado, grappling with the name Mark Ricciuto and losing the battle, it had to be said.
Let's bring in Robin Strathmore. G'day, Rob.
G'day, boys. I've got two quick points. The first one on Sean Marsh, I reckon Darren Lehman's got a lot to say in him getting selected, when I think Bancroft should have been brought in. I think he sees a lot of himself in Sean Marsh, a bloke with real talent who just one day just is going to click, but probably never will.
Mm.
And, I mean, that was probably the same as his career. And the other point, Rowan, and you'll disagree with me because you're a traditionalist, but I think with now with having a night test, it's time. I know they're different sports, but I think we need to look at a twilight grand final. And my point is that if you looked at this year's grand final with West Coast in the final, they had to watch that game at 12:30 in the afternoon. I just think that's a disgrace.
Well, I don't know if it's a disgrace. It's just it's a, a quirk of geography, isn't it? Do we only play a twilight grand final when a WA team's involved? Or, you know, like if there's two Victorian teams, do we make it a twilight grand final simply so the people in Perth can watch it at, you know, a 4:30 rather than 12:30 during the day? Yeah, look, you're right. I am a staunch traditionalist when it comes to the question of night grand finals, because I don't think that it's something that needs to be improved. The only thing that needs to be improved based on the last three seasons is the quality of the game itself.
Yes.
But that's pure chance, you know.
I'll tell you what, just on Darren Lehman, he might have some headaches if his son keeps making the scores he's making. In that current match, the Shield game at the moment against Tassie down at Belrive, he made 205, the youngest Lehman, of 242 deliveries, 31 boundaries. They made 7 for 600. So that'll create a nice little selection headache if making runs.
I've got a separated berth with him too. I saw there was a shot in the paper or on the website of him during the knock, and he had the helmet on.
Yeah.
And I was looking at him, I was thinking, Jesus, Fraser Gehrig made a comeback and he's playing cricket. I don't know, I could be wrong, but check it out. I reckon he's a dead ringer for Fraser Gehrig.
Richard in Cowes wants to talk about Australian cricket as well. G'day, Richard.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Look, people might think that New Zealand's fantastic and they're competitive against Australia, but I'm wondering if people have started to have a think yet. Australia's got Cummins, Stark, Khawaja injured, and in the last 4 months, they've lost Johnson, Harris, Haddon, Clark, Rogers, and Watson. Now, there's 9 players in 4 months, and they're still winning.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, it's the biggest transition we've had in our test ranks probably, since the last of the South African Rebel tours, you know, even exceeding when McGrath, Warren and Langer gave it away at once. So, yeah, I think that's a fair point, but you know, they're the sort of cycles that national teams go through, aren't they? And it's like how, you know, everyone talks about when New Zealand fixed us up here in 85, 86, you know, and Hadley running amok. Mm. Well, they were at their absolute peak and we were at one of our lowest ebbs. So, you know, it's not often I'd say that two test sides take each other on when they're both at the peak of their powers anymore, is it?
No, very rare. And look, credit to the Kiwis. And, you know, their last 2 years in test cricket has been terrific. They've become really hard, competitive guys who clearly enjoy each other's company. I mean, McCallum's a really interesting one because he doesn't want to go down the track of the banter and the aggro. And smiles aplenty. He's sort of got that, you know, cavalier approach. I mean, he's always batted that way, and it seems like he has that to his captaincy. But it seems like the players really play for him. They can have some bad moments. I mean, this is a huge day. Let's hope they can bat for a bit, New Zealand, and this test match then has got some real life that it could go down to the wire.
Oh, look, I think it will. I mean, you know, what's their lead now? It's
it's about, is it 60 or 70? No, they were 5 for 116, about 90 odd.
80, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they've only got a set as something over 200, and there could be some nervous times. We don't have a great history with chasing small targets,
exactly.
Do we?
Exactly. Well, take a break.
Just quickly, one of the other big talking points yesterday was the sub-fieldsman role. There was a furious debate flared on my Twitter feed about that.
Well, I agree with the comment that it's a bit of a joke putting the team Masua out there. I mean, the fact South Australia are obviously interstate on duty. They could have plucked someone from first grade cricket in SA.
Well, the defence was he played for Victorian seconds, but I looked up his record and the last game he played for Victorian seconds was 2008.
Hey, speaking of Victorians, where I was, Peter Siddle was coming down to fine leg. Not too many popular Victorians in South Australia.
Oh, no.
Every time Sids came down, they were on their
feet. Oh, really? So he's transcended the state rivalry.
They love Peter Siddle over there in South Australia. We'll talk some more cricket. Plenty of footy on the way. Melbourne Victory as well. Their fans, a little standoff last night, which I find really interesting.
Yeah, I want to have a chat about that.
22 past 12, we're underway. Sunday Sports Central. Big afternoon of live sport, as it always is on a Sunday afternoon. So we'll touch in with the golf, which is underway up there at, of course, the Australian Golf Club in Sydney. The two leaders about to tee off in the next 15 minutes, Matt Jones and also Jordan Spieth. Of course, Jones leading at 10 under par, Jordan Spieth at 7 under. There are Shield matches going on right across the country. So we'll keep you updated on those right throughout the afternoon. There's plenty of A-League basketball, plenty of American sport going on, and also the Melbourne Aces in action in the world of baseball. Plenty to talk about from last night as well. If you're just getting up to date, the Victory 2-1 over Adelaide United, the big game in the A-League. Perth defeated the Melbourne Aces in the baseball 6-2, a smacking in the NBL last night. Illawarra 108, Townsville 70 on the back of a big haul there from Kirk Penny. And Nico Rosberg pole in Abu Dhabi for the qualifying, the final race of the season of the Formula One's ahead of Lewis Hamilton and Kimi Raikkonen. And EPL overnight, some big results. Crystal Palace 5-1 over Newcastle. Also Man City redeemed themselves after last week 3-1 over Southampton. And Leicester City going beautifully.
Yeah.
The EPL.
Is that tonight against Man U?
No, they
drew, that was last night.
Drew 1-1 overnight.
Isn't that amazing? In fact, I was reading, there was a post in the Age yesterday about where Man U were at, and I thought there was a chance that after this weekend they could be on top of the table.
Mm.
And this piece was about how poorly they're going. So how does that work? Yeah, and, you know, it was about how they're just playing too defensive a brand. You know, they've had a lot of draws and, you know, not sort of the Manchester United way. But to see Leicester City there, I think the last few years there's been a bolter early in the season, but they've come back to the field pretty quick. But, yeah, I mean, not usually not up there come December. You know, so
I was looking at the championship overnight where Brighton and Hove Albion lead the championship 2-1 over Birmingham. But a lot of the teams that have been up in the EPL, so Wolves and Fulham, you know, even Bolton Wanderers are sitting bottom of the championship. It's just amazing that the cycle of EPL teams who sort of disappear off the radar into the championship might come back after a decade.
Yeah.
Pretty tough game. There's about 24 teams in the championship. So.
Yeah, no, well, it's obviously pretty competitive, isn't it? Mm. But, you know, I guess we need to see more of those promoted sides holding their own rather than just struggling for survival. And I think most people who follow it would love to see a different club in contention for the title. So, I think Leicester City are picking up a lot of neutral supporters.
No doubt. We had the AFL draft, of course, earlier on the week. There's been plenty of coverage of that and a great coverage on SCN. And, of course, the follow-up with the station speaking to a number of players. We also had the rookie draft on Friday. And one player who was picked up is Adam Markham, who's onto the Richmond list, the 23-year-old selected by the Tigers at pick 47. He's been good enough to join us on Sunday Sports Central. G'day, Adam.
Hi, Brett. Hi, Rowan. Thanks for having me, boys.
Mate, no worries.
Great to have you on. You are a teacher. In fact, you were at school on Friday morning. Tell us how the news sort of got relayed to you, how you found out.
Yeah, it was a bit of a crazy day on Friday, that's for sure. So I was watching it live in the office with a few of the colleagues who funnily enough, are Richmond supporters. So there was a few screams and a few shouts when the name came out at 47, that's for sure. So, yeah, it was a bit of a crazy day.
What school is it, Adam?
It's Penleigh and Essendon Grammar School in Keilor. So.
Yeah, okay, no, that's interesting. I think you might have a bit of trouble because I did see a few tweets flying around about students running amok, being left unsupervised after you'd buggered off to the club. Did you manage to get an emergency teacher to replace you?
Yeah, it mustn't have been my class, mate. That doesn't sound like me. So.
You're a bit of a disciplinarian, are you?
Yeah, that's me. You know, I was all over it. They were, you know, I'm very lucky that they were extremely understanding and also aware that it could have ended up like this. So the school have been extremely supportive and they've really looked after me. So
What do you teach there?
I'm a PE and health teacher there. So this is my first year there and, you know, love teaching as well. I love my footy, but also love my teaching. So I've had a fantastic experience there as well.
Yeah. Well, obviously, must have been fantastic emotions for you just to hear your name there, having been through the ringer before. I think you were first drafted 2010, is that right?
Yeah, so my first draft in 2010, and I think it's six drafts later that I've finally got my crack. So it's been a while. It's been a few watch drafts with nothing happen. So it was nice to finally get a result.
So what do you think made the difference this time? Do you think you have risen to a higher level, or do you think clubs have sort of adjusted their thinking about mature age players?
I honestly think it's probably a bit of both. I think I've developed my game and continued learning and persisting and just, you know, getting better and better each year. And I think what obviously Kane Lambert's done at Richmond this year has sort of shown that you can make that transition from VFL footy to AFL. And I know that there are many, many really great VFL footballers out there that, you know, deserve the chance to get drafted. So it was great to see. I think it was 8 in total this year, so you know, I was really happy to see so many boys from the VFL get an opportunity.
So, Adam, just your own mindset. You know, you're playing VFL, Northern Blues, Williamstown. As Rowan said, you were drafted initially 2010, and then it doesn't quite go to plan. Do you, you know, does your mindset sort of change that, okay, well, it is what it is, and I'll just go about my footy, or is there still that burning ambition inside you that I still want to reach the heights of AFL level? Just take us through how the mind sort of has worked over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, so there definitely has been some ups and downs, and I guess the one thing that I always kept in the back of my mind was just to make sure that I'm continually improving and continually learning. So I never wanted to stagnate or just stay at the same, I guess, level that I've been playing at. So luckily enough, I always had the drive to keep getting better, and hopefully that's something that holds me in good stead at Richmond as well.
And you, that is true that you don't stop learning, isn't it? I had a chat during the week to Sam Menegola, who's gone to Geelong, and he was talking about that. I mean, he'd been cast in tagging roles, and this year playing for Subiaco, played a lot more as an inside mid. And a lot of people would think, you know, gee, that's not much difference. But he said, it took a lot of retraining in terms of how he was positioning himself at stoppages, using his body to check opponents. There's a lot of subtleties in the game now at senior level that aren't just instinctive. You've got to really learn them like a student would learn lessons at school, right?
Yes, absolutely spot on. So I think I'm lucky enough to have been coached by Andrew Collins, who's, you know, done so much this year with me in terms of defensively and things like bringing a teammates into games and many of the subtleties that you mentioned, like body positioning. So I guess all those little strings you can add to your sort of armour, I guess, is what's held me in good stead and what's allowed me to sort of hopefully get this chance. So yeah, I completely agree with you.
Adam Markon with us here on Sunday Sports Central, has been picked up by the Tigers in Friday's rookie draft at pick 47. Just your discussions with Damien Hardwick, what's the chat been about the expectations and what you can add to the Tigers list? He this week has said that he feels confident Richmond have the squad that can elevate them sort of into that top four and be a real contender.
Yeah, so I've just briefly met Damien on Friday afternoon, and everyone at the club's been extremely welcoming, so I'm sure there'll be some more discussions throughout the week about my role and setting some aims and objectives for me, particularly this pre-season. I assume it's going to be a lot about, increasing fitness and strength and skills. And I think there'll sort of be an ongoing discussion about where they see my role within the club.
What about, Adam, the influence of your dad? Now, I'm old enough to have seen his career, and I was a big VFA fan. And he was a star. He was a seriously good player with Preston and a bit of a cult figure as well. How much have you been influenced by him, and how big a role does he continue to play in your footy?
Yeah, Dad's had a...
Sorry, Adam, it's Adrian Markon for those uninitiated. Yeah. He could really play.
Yeah, no, he was a great player back in his day, and I guess we were probably different players. I think he was more the high-flying goal sneak, but he's been able to definitely impart a lot of his knowledge, and he follows my game extremely closely and gives me a lot of great feedback, both positive and constructive. So I think his ability to keep me learning and improving is something that's really driven me to sort of get to this point. So I'm unsure if I could have done it without him, to be honest.
Good days down at Cramer Street. Was he there,
He played in the flags, didn't he, Adam? I'm pretty sure he played in the 83 and 84 Preston flags.
Yeah, so there was back-to-back. I think it might have been 83, 84 down at Cramer Street. So, yeah, very good days.
Was Jamie Shaw playing then?
Yeah. Jamie Shaw came in on the tail end. Yeah. He might have... Jamie Shaw might have been there for one of those flags, I think.
He came to Fitzroy after Preston. Yeah. 170 in a season.
The power sides of that era were Port. Port were just on the tail end of their dominance. Preston, Geelong West were... Yep. In fact, I remember... I'm a bit of a train spotter with this stuff. I remember Preston beat Geelong West in 83 and they beat Frankston to win in 84. Ray Shaw was captain coach. So... Yeah, I sort of miss those days. Does your dad crap on about the old days a bit too much, like all those old blokes do?
Yeah, he does. Absolutely spot on. So from all reports, I had a great side, and he talks a lot about Jamie Shaw and, I guess, the old-fashioned footballers, and there's definitely a lot of great stories, and it sounds like they were a pretty talented side.
Adam, great to catch up. Obviously, there's some adjustments to be made. Now you've been teaching, now you go on the rookie list at Richmond. So tell us how that sort of works in terms of, you know, having to go back into the AFL sort of system.
Yeah, it's something that I've always, really had my eye on is to be a part of that 24/7 environment. So I'm aware that the hard work starts now, and everything's sort of in the past, and I'm starting afresh. So I'm really looking forward to getting down to work and hopefully, you know, improving a lot and, you know, being a really integral part of the Richmond Footy Club. So that's something that definitely excites me, and I'm really driven to keep improving, like I said.
And just a quick one, coming from that phys ed teaching background, are you going to be at loggerheads with the Richmond fitness staff telling them what they should be doing, or are you just going to shut up and do what they tell you to?
Yeah, very much the latter, boy. So I think I'll just put my head down and bum up and work hard.
Yeah, no, good tip. You don't want to get on the wrong side of dinner. He's a pretty fierce customer.
That's it.
Adam, congratulations, mate. All the best.
Yeah, good luck.
Hopefully it's a great journey at 23 years of age.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the chat, boys.
Adam Marcon, Richmond rookie. And, I mean, look, we're seeing a lot of guys who, you know, don't get taken through the TAC Cup. And how many picks do we have this week? 70? There's a lot of good footballers who miss out. We've then got to go down a different route to try and get their opportunity.
I had this discussion with Finey a week ago. I think more of us are wanting to see guys like Adam really succeed at that level. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's great to have that elite sort of junior pathway, but players develop at different rates and different circumstances can affect how they progress. And I just hope that players like Adam and Sam Menegola continue to succeed, and so we see more and more of them coming into the system at a mature age.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll take some calls after the break, 94291116. Just your thoughts maybe on some of the draftees during the week, and maybe a few who are just a bit off the radar, who we're still trying to sort of get our head around and what influence they may have on 2016. 94291116, you can join us at any time. Welcome back at 19-1. Jordan Spieth and Matt Jones underway with their opening tee shots. A beautiful day up in Sydney at the Australian Golf Club, straight down the middle of the fairway, as you would imagine. Jones with a three-shot lead. We'll be taking some live coverage. Andy Maher, of course, Mark Allen, and the team all up at Sydney later on today. So we'll get into that throughout the afternoon. 94291116. If you want to give us a call, 0433981116 on the SMS. Paul in Glenroy has given us a call. Rowan Connolly with us for the first hour, of course. G'day, Paul.
G'day, Rowan. How are you going?
Yeah, good, Paul.
Yeah, just continuing with the AFL draft. I thought an interesting one, I don't know if you picked up on it, Alex Keith, the cricketer, who they're hoping has a bad year in the cricket and could be drafted by Adelaide. Mm. And also another guy from Williamstown called Andrew Gallucci, who's been given a chance at Carlton. And Mitch Brown, obviously, to Essendon, which is a great story too.
Yeah, we'll take it from the last one first. Mitch Brown, yeah, I was, you know, with my Essendon hat on, I was really happy they picked him up. I thought he played really well in the NAB Cup as a top-up, and then I watched a few VFL games during the year, and every time I saw him, he was terrific. I think he's got good judgment, and he may not be as sort of tall and strong as some key position players, but I think his judgment really helps him, and he's versatile. He can play forward or back, so absolutely wrapped for him. I reckon he was stiff to get cut in the first place by Geelong and deserved another chance. Gallucci, I saw during the finals, kicked that amazing goal, didn't he, at Port Melbourne? I can't remember which. Might have been the preliminary final against Essendon. Mm-hmm. I small goal-kicking forwards are a real premium these days. You have a look at the success of Eddie Betts and Paul Puopolo and Luke Bruce and those guys. Yeah. I saw that and thought, gee, someone will have a crack at him, surely, and that's how it's transpired. Alex Keith's an interesting one, isn't it? Because he sort of went the other way initially, didn't he? When, you know, the trend was to forsake cricket for football, he went the other way, and then it appears he's sort of gravitating back towards football again. If I was a cricket person, I'd be fairly worried about that I think football as a career path is looking more attractive compared to cricket all the time, really. Because unless you're among the real elite of the sport in this country, your opportunities to make a decent living pretty limited, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Does that answer them all, Paul?
Yeah, thanks, Ron. Thanks very much.
No dramas.
Appreciate the call. Tim's out in Moondah at 16-1. G'day, Tim.
Yeah, g'day. I was actually hoping to ask Rowan about this case with the Talia brothers. I've been trying to make sense of it.
So have I.
And I'm likening it to the Melbourne case where they were found they didn't tank. It seems to be a convenient outcome for the AFL, but for people like myself who just read about it in the papers, it doesn't make sense. The lost phone, deleted text, supposedly Cole Cheney's practical joke was so good he sucked in Stratton, Gibson and Luke Beveridge twice. which I find very difficult to believe. It sounds like the Bulldogs are unsatisfied. So two questions. What do you think of the case, Rowan? And hypothetically, if they had been found guilty, what consequence would have they received?
Yeah, good questions. It sounds from that amount of detail, Tim, like you followed it more closely than I have. I've got to be honest. I've found it a real, you know, it's consumed a lot of time and energy and reportage for not much in my view. Interesting comparison with the Melbourne thing. I think a lot of Melbourne fans at this point will be saying, yeah, well, the people in this one aren't going to get fined $500,000 for being found not guilty of it. Mm. I don't know. Look, I've sort of tried to cut to the chase, which for me personally was, how big an impact could the information have made anyway? You know, sometimes I think we overestimate the amount that, you know, when opposition spies get thrown out of clubs training and things like that.
Yep.
When you actually sit down and think about how big a difference will that make? I mean, it's one thing to know a side's game plan. It's another thing entirely to be able to thwart that opposition side's game plan, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I understand the, you know, the perceptions about integrity and whatever, you know, that's got to be watched fairly closely. But look, to me, I could be wrong here, but to me it didn't seem like as big a deal as some people have made it out. I don't know. I mean, you've obviously kept abreast of it, Tim. How, you know, what do you think the various penalties for those involved should be? You still there, Tim?
My head is, if allegedly perhaps they had passed on information, would it potentially then open them up to, I don't know, some sort of legal problems where it's connected to things like, you know, betting and integrity and stuff like that? I just, the one thing that really gets me is how Luke Beveridge could be sucked in by Kyle Cheney. Like, that doesn't make sense. You know, you'd think Luke Beveridge would be able to get Kyle Cheney to tell the truth.
Yeah, so who do you reckon's telling Porkies then?
Well, I wonder if maybe Kyle Cheney has spoken the truth and then under pressure, because if he had have said something about Talia, who's his teammate, I mean, that might have got him potentially, you know, in a lot of trouble at his own club where he's trying to make a new career for himself. So, but look, I just can't make sense of it, and I feel like there's more to it, and maybe we're not getting the full story. But it could be, as what you said, that maybe the AFL felt it made no difference to the outcome of the game, and we move on. So, look, I really don't know, but it just doesn't smell right.
Yeah, no, it's fair point. I just think perhaps a lot of people are like me. They just think, well, it's post-season, you know, have the consequences of this been overstated? I mean, that said, the Bulldogs Adelaide final, what was the margin then? It was a kick, wasn't it?
Yeah, so yeah,
if it had been a 10-goal thumping, people would probably been more comfortable with it. But, you're right to raise those questions, and I guess that's why it's continued to be in the public domain. But I think that passing on of information, funnily enough, I think the AFL world is pretty small, and the more that people move around from club to club, the smaller it gets.
Hard to keep the intellectual property in house.
Yeah, exactly. And I think often there's a lot of passing on of information that's completely unintentional.
I mean, look at the assistant coaches at charge clubs.
Well, look at
year upon year. So
look at the Scott brothers.
Take a lot of stuff.
You know, look at the Scott brothers. They have breakfast together and stuff. You know, it must be hard for them.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tim. Appreciate that. Just some Shield scores around the country on the way to the break. South Australia 7 declared for 600. None for 3. Second, Tom Arantezi all out 284. Queensland 1 for 44 after making 259. New South Wales made 303. And the Vicks will resume at the Wacker in about half an hour's time. 1 for 149 in their second dig. 322 in their first WA, made 186 row.
Now, I reckon when we come back, BP, we should put this Melbourne victory fan walkout on the menu.
Indeed. Yeah, I don't know. It's been fascinating commentary all week about fans and the 198 who are listed there.
And the media's role in this story.
Absolutely.
That's what I'd like to talk
about.
We'll
also catch up with Larry Canning on course up in Sydney. Sunday Sports Central here on 11:16 SEN. At the Melbourne victory situation, as an extension, the FFA, David Gallop's been under a lot of question during the week. The 198 people that have been named and shamed and not allowed into venues. Rebecca Wilson, who's a contributor, of course, here on the run home, has been at the forefront of alleged death threats. What have you made of all of this, Rowan, during the week?
Well, you know, I need to put my hand up and say I work for a competing media organisation, but I thought it was fairly reprehensible from the Daily Telegraph, to be honest. You know, a lot of those people who are named, you know, people in equivalent sports don't get that level of opprobrium cast in their direction. More to the point, why is it that, in fact, I wouldn't even say News Corp as a whole, because the Herald Sun isn't this bad. Why is it that the Daily Telegraph, why do they have shock jocks in Sydney? But there's this real, to me, semi-racist sort of coverage of the game up there. It's like there's this old sort of Anglo-Saxon 1950s type conservative crowd who are so scared of the growing multiculturalism in this country and the growing popularity of other sports that they feel they need to beat soccer off with a stick. I see it on Twitter all the time. I mean, Malcolm Conn, for example, who's a long-time journalistic colleague of me, he every second tweet of Mal's is about some negative thing about soccer. And we don't. I agree with the soccer fans when they say the same aspersions aren't cast on other sports. We don't do it with AFL. Now, we may not get as much obvious trouble, but every week there are arrests at AFL games that you never hear about in the papers, Brett. We make a huge issue of things like flares, and you know, there's obviously a safety aspect there. But there's plenty of people who go to AFL games and get hassled and intimidated, in some cases beaten up by drunk patrons. Test cricket, you know, there's plenty of people who get arrested every day at Test cricket. The FFA, I think, are in an invidious position here because they have to be seen to be tough on crowd problems, and rightly so. But one of the problems with this News Corp or this Sydney News Corp campaign against the sport is that I think it's made the FFA a bit scared. You know, they're scared of being on the wrong end of this really bad publicity. And the game in this country, while it has got more popular, it's not at a position yet where it can afford to publicly thumb its nose at powerful media organisations. So my question is, why is the Daily Telegraph and what people like Alan Jones, why are they so scared of soccer? Is it because there's a quasi-racist element to their thinking? Are they worried about their own particular sports? Now, in Jones's case, that's rugby union. In Rebecca's case, it's rugby league. I just don't like it. I find it really distasteful. I love soccer. I'm one of the growing band of people who love AFL and love soccer, think that the two coexist really well, and are happy to embrace both. And I think we've got to remember there's far more of them than scared old white people stuck in the 1950s.
I take everything you've said, okay? So I agree with a lot of that. The only thing, and I'd risk being ridiculed by the football soccer fraternity, I reckon there is a comparison, though, between soccer fans, and if I was sitting at the cricket, which I was the last 2 days, and sitting in the outer at the footy and the way they behave themselves, I think there is a difference. The media gets criticised for jumping on soccer fans and the way they behave, but some of the element, and I agree, it's a minority, and yes, it gets blown out of control a bit too much, but there is an element that is just at another level with the West Sydney Wanderers fans in particular, who have been severely criticised. There's an anger there. What's the word I'm looking for, Ray? There's a certain type of person amongst that supporter group that
That latch onto it to use it for their own ends.
You just say, wow. But, which are different to cricket fans or footy fans.
Yeah, you know what I think part of it is, though? I reckon you can't have your cake and eat it too. And I reckon I've been to enough A-League games to see how the crowds behave. And that tribalism and passion and the chanting and the singing and the dancing and stuff. We, on the one hand, I think, you know, there's a hypocrisy. Yep. Some of the media want to embrace that and say, isn't it great colour? Hmm. And then on the other hand, when it gets a little bit out of control, they say, this is terrible. And, you know, I think soccer's always in this invidious position where it's having to tiptoe around these sort of unconvinced old white Australian elements. So, yes, there are crowd problems. Yes, the FFA needs to crack down on it. The Victory fans, well, they deny themselves seeing a great win, but I think they've made a pretty effective point. And sometimes the fans feel powerless to be able to do that. So they've certainly made their point.